Hi, I'm Jason Bryan from the Shortime Wrestling Podcast and founder of the Mat Talk Podcast Network. Shows on the network are individually owned and operated, and those opinions presented and expressed may not reflect others, the sponsors, patrons, or the parent network. Find more shows about the greatest sport in the world at the Mat Talk Podcast Network at mattalkonline.com.
Welcome to On the Mat. I am Kyle Klingman, along with Turkey Gobbler Andy Hamilton of Flow Sports, sponsored by Cliff Keen Athletic. Glad we get a chance to have another show. It's been a little while, but glad we get to get back and having one of these shows. And again, thanks to Cliff Keen Athletic for their sponsorship and being part of this show. Man, how many things have happened since we had a last show? We could dive into this. I mean, Clarissa Chun getting the head women's job at Iowa. I think that was a talking point from a lot of people. And I was surprised at how many people reached out to me and just asked, what's the inside? What are you hearing? And there's no room for speculation. Now it's going to be Clarissa Chun, who was an Olympic bronze medalist, world champion. And she's going to be the very first women's coach at a Power 5 program. What do you think of the hire?
I think it's a great hire. I think it's terrific. I think when I first started hearing word back in the spring that, hey, I was going to start a women's program, and you start kicking around names of possible candidates, like, she's one of the first three or four that came into my mind. And I think she'll be great for so many reasons and be able to, I mean, number one, her reputation in the sport is sterling, right? I mean, it's spectacular. And so I think she's going to do a great job attracting top talent. I think people are drawn to her, and well, she knows wrestling. She knows wrestling inside and out. And I think it's just such a terrific fit for Iowa. And man, how cool was it, the reception that she's gotten thus far? I mean, when she gets to go out on the mat for the Iowa Princeton duel, and even before they honored her and started rattling off her credentials, like, the place just went bonkers just seeing her out on the mat. And so I think she got two or three ovations that night. She got a huge ovation in Kinnick Stadium at the Iowa football game the next day. And so I think she was probably like based on what I saw, it seemed like she was probably pretty blown away by the reception she got on her first couple days on the job.
And you were there for the press conference. What kind of vibe did you get from that press conference? Not only from administration, but I saw Tom Brands in the corner. Did you feel like there was some real enthusiasm there?
Yeah, absolutely. I think people are really fired up about the hire and super energized about just the program in general, that Iowa is doing this, that they're the first Power 5 program to do this, and that, you know, they're hiring a top-notch head coach to lead the program.
As we look at this, I think it's important to look back at the background of Clarissa Chun and how it happened. So Hawaii is the first state to sanction girls wrestling. I think that's an important piece to understand and how she got this job. That if Hawaii does not do that, if they're not the first on board, Clarissa Chun does not have this job. And I think it's important to look at that because Iowa has not sanctioned girls wrestling. How important that is, that she had an opportunity early. She got to develop in the sport. She got to see the sport. She got to eventually see the high bar of what it could be. And then she got in a position where she could succeed at the highest level. Now she's in the Iowa job. So it's interesting that the very first state to sanction girls high school wrestling now has the first Power 5 coach. Pretty amazing.
Couple of things there. Yeah. And we're, what, that was 23 years ago?
Yeah.
And here we are in Iowa. We're still waiting on it.
Yeah. In an unlikely state, really.
Yeah, it's Hawaii, not, right? Yeah.
It's not a wrestling power. By
yeah. And then the other thing that kind of comes to mind immediately for me is just think about, like, Clarissa's career and her career path. As you mentioned, she's one of the first state champions in Hawaii history. The first year that girls wrestling was sanctioned, she was a part of it. Part of the first state. So anywhere that girls wrestling was sanctioned at the high school level, she's one of the first to participate. She goes to Missouri Valley. She's part of the first program to offer scholarships for college women's wrestling. Now she's the first Power 5 head women's coach.
So when you say all that, it really does provide proof that this is a path that works, that you sanction women's wrestling, that this leads to these opportunities. And when you don't, where do you go from here? Because I hear it all the time when you don't have it in Iowa, like, what are we supposed to do right now? What's our opportunity? You kind of think, do I want to go all in on this as a girl? Is this actually going to lead anywhere? And right now the answer is no, if you don't actually have a sanctioned sport. I mean, you could reverse it with the men too. It's like, if it's not sanctioned, how are you going to get good? So in a state like Iowa, like if you don't sanction rodeo and you want to be good in rodeo, you could probably find a few things, but it's probably not going to be a reality if you don't have a path to do it.
Would you have gone into rodeo for sanction, Kyle?
No, man. That sport's hard, man. Okay. But I think it'd be good for wrestling, especially in folk style, just learning riding techniques.
You think so?
I think it would be. Yeah, I think it'd be really good. And vice versa. I think wrestling's good for rodeo, potentially. So I think it could be mutually beneficial. Yeah. I'd like to see you in rodeo. I could see you doing it. For sure.
We need to see you on a bucking bronc.
Oh my gosh.
That'd be terrific.
I would get throttled by that. That sport's so hard. But as far as the wrestling component goes, I just can't figure what the holdup is. Like, I've heard reasons and I've heard excuses, but Iowa hasn't been advocating for it. They aren't putting themselves on the line and saying, let's just make sure we make this happen in a state that's important. I hope all of the programs adding, and it's not just Iowa right now. You see Wartburg adding, you see Simpson adding. What do we have? 10 now in the state of Iowa that have college women's programs. That's a good trend, but we just got to keep adding more. And the more D1 programs right now, we're at 3, Iowa, Sacred Heart, and Presbyterian. That number needs to go up.
And it will. Yeah, there's no doubt in my mind it will. I want to rewind a little bit to one of your points about the sanctioning. I know what you're getting at here. I also wouldn't dismiss the power that the Coaches Association in the state of Iowa has had on girls' high school wrestling. Now, it isn't sanctioned, as we've talked about on this program in the past, but when the Coaches Association, with the help of Charlotte Bailey and some others here, prominent people, wrestling people in Iowa, put together a Coaches Association girls state tournament, that was a game changer for Iowa high school girls wrestling. And we went from, I don't know, I think like 90 girls out for, I think there were actually 120 girls signed up for that tournament. We ended up with 90 because it was a blizzard weekend. Then we went, I think these are just numbers off the top of my head, but I think, you know, ballpark, but I think we went to about 300 plus in year two. And then we went over 500 last year. And so, yeah, it's not sanctioned, but we've seen exponential growth in the last 2 to 3 years because the fact that the Coaches Association, there have been some leaders that have kind of taken the reins of this thing and made it happen. And they're setting an example. So girls that want to go up, you know, girls that see that it's happening are saying, hey, I can do that. I can go be part of this. And is it the same as having a state sanctioned tournament, you know, with all the bells and whistles? No, but it's getting closer and closer every year. I mean, we moved it out of a high school gymnasium up in Waverly Shell Rock because it was overflowing with competitors and spectators, and moved it into the new arena down in Coralville. Had more. I think this year it'll have more of a traditional state tournament feel, you know, that we're getting back into the normal flow of a regular high school season, and just eager to see how many girls that they're going to be on the mat in Iowa this year. I haven't looked at the numbers yet. I would guess, you know, I'd be surprised if we're not pushing 1,000. Close to it. There's a lengthy list of girls tournaments, high school tournaments across the state that have been set up this year. So girls high school wrestling is growing in Iowa. Is it the way that you and I would like to see it grow, you know, with state, you know, state association, whether it's the girls union getting behind it or handing it off to the boys association who runs the state wrestling tournament so well. I think we'd rather see one of those two things happen, you know, in terms of sanctioning, but I don't think it's the end all be all. I think we're seeing really positive steps without. But to your point, it's Iowa. We should be full throttle on this thing already.
Should be there and
should have been there a long, long time ago. We shouldn't be, 33rd or 34th or 40th or 50th, whatever, we're going to wind up being for, on that list of states that Hawaii started as number one.
And I'd love to see a full dual slate where they actually have some dual meets and actually have that atmosphere where girls get to run into a high school gymnasium and have some dual meets that mean something. So we're pushing toward that. And I think with the University of Iowa piece, with Clarissa being the first coach, I think the questions that have yet to be answered are just as fun as any of the answers that we have right now. Where are they going to hold competitions? Are they going to have one before an Iowa men's meet? Are people ready for freestyle rules? I mean, are Iowa wrestling fans, how many even know that it's going to be freestyle? I would guess there's a good share that think there's a women's program and they're going to show up for the first time and be like, what is this? I don't even know what's going on here. So what does the recruiting process look like for Clarissa? And do you bring people on board the year before and let them be in opens? What does the schedule look like? Who's on the schedule? Is it going to be Augsburg, Wartburg, King, who's really good, McKendry, who's really good, to Simon Fraser from Canada, who's really good, come down? So all of those questions about what the Iowa program is going to look like, I think it's really fascinating. I just can't wait to be part of it. I'm just glad that we get to watch this show from a really good distance.
Who's going to be on Clarissa's staff?
The staff, yeah. I know who I'd like to see on it, but is it going to match what really happens there? So just a lot of exciting things. And how are they going to go into the practice time with the men? And how does that work out in the new facility? And I hope they go to the Extreme Arena for some meets. I think it's a good venue, but I think it would be good to be able to have a doubleheader with an Iowa women's duel before or after, and then a men's duel. So I think hopefully the Big Ten Network gets behind it. So just a lot of exciting things that could happen. And as we go into the excitement of the college season, I don't want to call it a bombshell because we've been waiting for it, but just big news is that Nick Sirianni is going to Michigan. I didn't see it coming, Andy. I don't know if you had any inkling that this was a possibility, but I sure didn't. I didn't see Michigan on the table, but it certainly is going to help their lineup as they go in to make at minimum a trophy run. And some people are saying a title run, and we'll get into the particulars on that. But did you see this coming?
How do I put this? Yes and no. I mean, yes, from the standpoint that, like, when you start looking around at places that make the most sense, Michigan makes a lot of sense. No, from the standpoint that nobody was talking about it. And so as it's unfolding, I was just thinking, like, why isn't Michigan part of the equation here? Well, they need, certainly a high-powered lineup that could use a little extra oomph at 125 or 133, whichever weight he plans to go. You've got Cliff Keen Wrestling Club there in Ann Arbor, a strong freestyle presence. You got a lot of good training partners around him. I thought that made sense from that standpoint, on so many levels. So that being said, like, the one thing that was surprising to me about it all was just, like, why aren't we hearing anything about Michigan here? There was so much talk about, at first, like, a lot of Arizona State speculation, then Penn State, Ohio State, Iowa State, some talk about Nebraska, and then down to the wire, decision time, he's a Wolverine.
But have you seen, in your experience, and I'll go off mine, I'm going to say it's the strangest winding journey of a college wrestler I've ever seen, where you go to Penn State, transfer to Rutgers, wrestle there for two seasons, go out to Arizona State to train, and now you're at Michigan. I mean, where there's just so many things that were up in the air and speculation. I mean, we had the Flow documentary, Man of Mystery or whatever it was called. He really is. This is this makes Steve Mocco in some ways seem like a walk in the park, going from Iowa to Oklahoma State, or anyone else like Ray Brinzer, Oklahoma State to Iowa. You just have one transfer there. Here you have a different club environment at Arizona State. You have now three different colleges. This is a this has been a strange journey, man.
Absolutely.
I mean,
absolutely. Because when he's left places, it's been kind of jarring for me. The fact that he had great success at Penn State, coming off a terrific freshman season in which Penn State had five returning national champions coming back. Then, of course, it goes to Rutgers. All right, he's going to go back home, right? Like, going to be the hometown hero and becomes the school's first national champion. Huge success there.
Yeah.
In an environment that seemed to work pretty well for him. And then I was surprised to see him leave there. And, you know, I thought probably was done with college wrestling at that point, unless he came back to go to ASU at that point. But... here we are, school number three,
and it's just interesting to look at that because not a freestyle monster. So he comes out, and I'm just going off memory here. 2019, he wins the NCAA championships. Not a freestyle monster, but then beats a returning world bronze medalist that beat the streets in Joe Colon. So you say this guy has some freestyle potential. Takes an Olympic redshirt year for 2020. That gets canceled because of COVID. 2021, tries for the Olympic trials. He gets COVID, and then he goes to the world team trials at 61 kilos. Looks pretty good in his opening match, then gets beat 3-0 by Nathan Tomasello, and he's out of the mix. So here we go. What weight's he going to go, 25 or 33 in the Michigan lineup? And I think now that he's inserted, there's now title talk for Michigan. And I'll tell you what, just – from my experience, be careful about any title talk because I don't think Iowa's going to win it. I don't think Penn State's going to win it. I don't think Michigan's going to win it. The reason I say that is because it takes so much to win it. And so once you start thinking like, and it's good to have excitement. I mean, yeah, you got to get behind it, but so many things have to fall in place. 13 programs have won D1 national titles. Only 6 have won multiple titles in D1. That means it's insanely hard to do. And so it's nice when people say we want to build a championship program. Augsburg and Wartburg, look at these cats. It's been since 1994, the last team other than Augsburg or Wartburg has won a D3 title. So these dynasties stay for a reason and they have a formula. Can Michigan win it? Yes, they can. But be careful about getting too optimistic because all the pieces have to fall into place. You have to have good weight cuts. You don't know what Suriano's going to do. I mean, it's been since 2019, since he wrestled a college match. And so it's kind of this formula that if you talk to Jim Miller at Wartburg, who's won 10, as he said, we never talked about winning titles. And he went into every season saying we suck. Because he didn't want guys getting believing the hype and thinking you're better than you are because it is so insanely hard to cross the threshold and win a championship. So I don't know what you think, but I don't think Sean Bormet would be this way either. And you don't hear it from him like, hey, you got to build a team and you're trying to build a championship team and he's doing all the things. And I'm a huge Sean Bormet fan, but I guarantee you he's not predicting an NCAA championship. Because he knows how hard it is.
Let's rewind, Kyle. You said you're not picking Iowa.
No, I mean,
you're not picking Penn State. No. You're not picking Michigan. So who's your pick?
No, I'm just saying,
taking those three.
What I'm saying is like mentally is what I'm saying. It's like,
you're not picking anybody.
No, it's because I know it's too hard. I'd say if I had to just weight it, I'd say it's 40, 40, 20. I'd say it's 40% Iowa, 40% Penn State and 20% Michigan. Now,
okay.
I don't think Oklahoma State has the personnel to win it. Now, trophy's different. Now, if you're talking about trophy hunt, yeah, Michigan's absolutely right in the mix. But when I say that, what I mean is I don't think any team's going to win because I know how hard it is. I mean, I know.
I guarantee you they're going to crown a champion.
There's going to crown a champion. But
I don't want to spoil your prediction here.
Is someone that refuses to be optimistic about this. And people, okay. I've had friends call me Negative Nancy. And I'll tell you what. I have a friend, he's a big Northern Iowa football fan, and they were playing North Dakota State, and they got ahead, and they were all excited. I was like, hey, be careful, man. Like, you're getting excited right now because they recovered a fumble in their head. You know what? You and I got beat. So it's that extreme paranoia that we've talked about with Gable. How many times you and I brought this up? Gable thought he had cancer at the NCAA championship. Convinced himself he had cancer until he won it. The minute they won it and it was locked, he said his whole body flushed out.
Yeah.
Because he couldn't let himself believe that they weren't. I mean, he just was so paranoid until it was locked.
Yeah. And sometimes later than that, sometimes getting on the plane to go on vacation the next day, right?
And these cats are a wreck. And so I've been around these guys with Miller and Gable in particular, is that they know how hard it is to win and they ain't predicting they're going to win. And so that's why I say it's like they almost go into the point of paranoia where it's like everything has to go right and you cannot let your guard down. And I just think that's the lesson I'm trying to come across here, is that winning a championship is so freaking insanely hard that to talk about it like it's a possibility, I think it's unwise, is what I'll say.
Well, look at how many teams have won trophies in the last, say, 30 years. I mean, let's go back to the mid-90s, Oregon State. You know, Iowa State's won a bunch of trophies. Arizona State has been in the mix since they won the title in 88. You know, and in recent years, Missouri, Virginia Tech, NC State. But again, there's only been 13 that have planted the flag at the top of the mountain. And so can you get near the top? Yeah. But do you have that extra little bit to get to the very top, to be able to handle the pressure that comes with, you know, being in the mix for a team race, right? I mean, there's some heightened pressure that comes with that.
Yeah, and so exactly, I like that analogy to plant that at the top of the mountain. It's just so many things have to fall into place. And when you talk about those 13 teams, some of those are early teams like Indiana tied in the 30s that people don't know about. Cornell College won it in 47. Iowa State Teachers College, which is now Northern Iowa, won it in 1950. So you kind of have those schools. Oklahoma, which was a perennial powerhouse, which has multiple titles, the last time they brought it home was 1974. I mean, you look at the 1982 team for Oklahoma that got second. They had Dave Schultz, Mark Schultz, Andre Metzger, Dr. Death, Steve Williams. I mean, that team was absolutely loaded, and they didn't win it. And I think one year, Oklahoma had 11 returning All-Americans in the lineup, kind of like Iowa did that one year, and they still didn't get it done. Wow. And so that's all I'm saying, is just to ask Jay Robinson how hard it is. Ask him. I mean, he had a formula, that he had a five-year plan that took 15 years to finally get it done in 2001. Started in the 86-87 season, said, I think we have a formula that can win it 5 years. And then what happened is he had the personnel, and then he just went through a litany of things of what fell apart. He had an Olympian that decided to go home. He had an injury. So, I mean, just four different things fell apart.
You're talking about 5-07? Is that what you said?
What was that?
Are you saying 2005 to 2007?
No, I'm saying Jay Robinson had a five-year plan that he thought he could win it at Minnesota, and it took 15 years.
Yeah.
And it was just painful agony. He almost planted that flag at the mountaintop in 99, and then Iowa gets it, and Brock Lesnar gets beat by Stephen Neal in the last match, and they lose by 2 points. And Wes Hand gets in, Chad Erickson doesn't. It's the difference between who wins and who loses on who qualifies. I mean, it's that minute. So, again, it's a three-team race now. I'm putting Michigan in contention, but, again, just be careful about predictions, because history shows they don't come true.
Yeah, I mean, like, to your point, you know, when you started talking about Jay, the first thing that came to my mind was the class, you know, that was largely responsible for his last championship, when you've got Mac Ryder and that group, Roger Kish, Matt Coase was in there too, Manny Rivera, who am I forgetting? CP Slater. Yeah. That class was, I think, regarded by some people as the greatest recruiting class ever assembled up to that point. And they, you know, I think a lot of people were thinking Minnesota's going to take over and run off a real string of titles here. And they won what? Just the one?
One in 07. Yeah. 01, 02, and then the 07. And yeah,
because
you're right.
You had Oklahoma State putting together a string before that. And then, you know, along comes along comes Iowa again. Tom Brands comes back, and Perry, Metcalf, Slayton, Borschel, et cetera. Like, they put together a string of three there. So it's hard.
Yeah,
it's absolutely hard.
And what you're saying there is important, because 07, Minnesota did not have a really good tournament. It came down to actually 197, where Glenn beat Kurt Backus for it, for them to.
Josh Glenn, yep.
Yeah, Josh Glenn from American. So Iowa State was right there, and it took that, and then Cole Conrad got the pin in the final, so it really wasn't going to matter. But it came down to the second to last match of the tournament, and you would think that the team they had, that Minnesota's going to run away with it. And then all they lost was Cole Conrad, and you think, hey, they're a lock to win it next year. I think they got 10th the next year. I think they fell that far down.
In 08?
Yeah, I think they were.
Really?
Let's check.
Let's look this up. I don't buy that, but you got a great memory, Kyle.
Well, we'll see.
Oh, my goodness. You're right. Wow.
So they got 10th the next year after winning, and they lose one wrestler off the team. So my recollection is that was the Mac Ryder year where Mac had a hard time making weight.
He still finished fifth, though.
He finished fifth, but my recollection, again, is that Iowa went up there and Joe Slayton, I think, rode him like a dog in the duel. And I think that was the year Joe Slayton in 08 got second to Coleman Scott.
Yep.
So
here's what happened to Minnesota.
In 08?
In 08.
Okay.
Jason Ness made the finals at 25, lost to Escobedo. Mac Ryder was fifth. Manny Rivera was seventh. Dustin Schlater goes in as a two seed at 149, toughest bracket of all time, comes away finishing seventh.
Yeah.
So they lost a lot of points there.
Yep.
Those were their only All-Americans.
Really?
Those were their only All-Americans. They lost Conrad. He wasn't part of that team.
Yep.
So big time point loss there at heavyweight. But they didn't get anything substantial out of 57, 65, 74, 84, 97 heavyweight. We could run through those brackets quickly, but
yeah, but
even throw in Dustin Schlater, who, you know, to that point in his career, I think he'd had two career losses, right? I think he lost to Metcalf in the Big Ten finals. Did he lose to somebody else previously that year?
Yeah, he may have. I mean, when did he lose? He lost to Gillespie the year before.
Wait, I doubt he would have, because he was a two seed in that bracket.
Oh, yeah. But it goes down the line. And this is, we're talking team situation here. It goes for individuals too, is that think of how many people came into this season with unbelievable hype that have been beaten already. Okay. Carter Young has an unbelievable world team trials, gets third. I think he beats two NCAA champions at somewhere along the line on the backside. He gets ridden against Minnesota and loses that match 6-4. Braxton Amos, a junior world champ and a Greco world medalist, makes it to the finals of the Olympic trials, has been beaten already this year.
When you're talking about young guys, how about this? Like, we went 8 years. We went from 2013 until this year without a returning national champion losing in the month of November.
Wow.
And it happened twice, almost three times in a span of 4 days. Because you had Peyton Robb over Austin O'Connor. You had Julian Ramirez over Shane Griffith. And then you almost had Peyton Robb over David Carr.
So we've had two in the month of November.
Okay. We're 3 seconds away from having three.
I mean, I'm having a hard time making sense of a lot of this, especially with Abe Assad getting beat by a high schooler up at the Luther Open. I mean, what a wild, wild season this is starting off to be with everything that's going on. Suriano goes to Michigan, bolsters their lineup. You have stars that are getting beat during the season. And again, I think people get ambitious. They get excited about the lineup, but until you start looking at who's there and you look at a 133, you look at a 197, how are you going to come out? How do you get on the stand at some level and be in the top eight. It's that hard to be able to do that. I mean, you look at just the talent there. Dean Hamidi. I mean, I think he was a Super 32 champ and a junior national champ. And where is he going to end up? I mean, I think if he gets on the podium a couple times during his career, that's a pretty big deal. So I think the more and more I think about it all the time is that you get on that podium at D1s, that is such a huge deal. And I just think it gets harder and harder every year to do. It's just the level of talent, and these guys are getting so good so fast. To be a high school senior and to beat a quality opponent like Abe Assad from Iowa, who was a quote All-American a couple of years ago when they canceled because of COVID. But that's Abe Assad came in with credentials. He was good. And so I don't know what you think on that, but boy, it's kind of with NIL, with transfers, with things going on. And we're kind of in the Wild West right now. It feels like we're in the Wild West of wrestling. And I don't know if that's happening with other sports too, but knowing wrestling as intimately as we do, it feels like that. It just feels like it's open season, and it's just wherever you can land, you land right now.
Transfer portal has changed some things for sure.
Has. And NIL.
You know, if this existed 15 years ago, you know, Brent Metcalf would have gotten an extra year. Borshall, all those guys transferred for Virginia Tech. I mean, there are other guys that probably stayed somewhere where they wouldn't have stayed otherwise if they had options. So that frees things up a little bit. I think I'm just curious to see what happens, you know, where we're at in 5 years with NIL and with combine that with the portal and what this looks like and how big of a deal truly is recruiting. How big of a deal does recruiting become, at least recruiting high school athletes? Or do we see this becoming more like Major League Baseball free agency type of deal?
It feels like that to me.
Could be.
It does. Now, what do you know about just some of the talk? Because I don't know the details of it, but you hear people saying you can now pay athletes. And what was it? Kevin Dresser said in Fight Night that someone's getting $100,000 to come to school. I don't know how legit that is. I just don't know what's true and what isn't.
Yeah.
Can you actually pay an athlete to come through some sort of a backhanded contract? I don't know. I hear some people say, yeah, absolutely you can. And that if you want to pay someone, or if someone wants to sponsor them for $250,000, then by all means, go for it. Seems like that's possible with NIL, but I don't know enough about it. And be curious to know if you know.
I think, you know, from what I've gathered, I think it kind of depends on who your compliance officer is and how much they're willing to bend for you, how much they're willing to allow you to do. Because my sense on it is there's a lot of gray area on what you can and what you can't do. And some people are going to live on different sides of the gray or in different shades of the gray.
Yeah, but you see some people that we know hopping on board with Mark Ironside, who owns Ironside Apparel. He's already gotten Spencer Lee on board and gotten some of those athletes. And I was at the Iowa Army meet and I saw some Spencer Lee shirts, and
sure,
he's getting a cut of that. The game has absolutely changed in a very short amount of time.
Yeah, but I think what you're referring to earlier is you know, a little bit different than what we're talking about with apparel deals, right? Like, you're talking about just putting money in their hand straight out of
somehow.
Out of somebody's pocket.
Yeah, but what I don't know is that if the NIL can circumnavigate that, if there's a system in place where, hey, we'll sponsor you in this and we're going to give you $100,000 and there's a backdoor deal and it on paper, it looks like, hey, this is legit, but it's more like, hey, this is our way to pay you to get you to come here. I don't know. Like, that stuff, I just flat out don't know enough about.
Well, who's going to police it?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, if it takes the FBI to bring down this college basketball recruiting scandal, you know, of a couple, 3 years back. Do you think they're paying attention to college wrestling?
No, they are.
Think the NCAA is from a governance standpoint?
I don't think
policing this?
Yeah. Not at all. But again, there's also a finite amount of money that can go around. But you look on AJ Ferrari's Instagram. He's selling posters for, I think there's a limited edition of 50 for $100 each. So he's using his name and image likeness. We knew that was going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
So he got on board right away. So, boy, what
you didn't expect anything else from Mr.
Well,
Fast, Twitch, did you?
Of course not. But what a wild time to be following wrestling. This is fun. This is a blast with women's wrestling coming on board. We got Iowa getting a women's wrestling program. We got NIL. And it's like no other. And within the last year, this sport has changed. You just keep seeing different products coming out. So it's pretty interesting.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're in strange times, unprecedented times. And I mean, I think about like how different the sport was when I first came into it. And it's night and day.
Really is.
It's night and day. I mean, even being down in Iowa City on Sunday for the Iowa Army duel and getting a chance to talk to Phil Hattie, the longtime legendary PA voice of Iowa wrestling. And he was back, you know, it's the first time I've seen him in a duel meet in a long, long time. And he said, you know, coming out with the, you know, the pyrotechnics at the beginning of the duel and all the other stuff. And he goes, he said, you know, there didn't used to be a sideshow for a long time. There, you know, it was just the wrestling. And I said, yeah, Phil, you were the sideshow. And that was about it, though. I mean, you know, he was spectacular on the mic for PA and really got fans into it. But aside from that, it was just a product on the mat for a long, long time. And now it's a whole show down there.
Yeah, it is. And just to give some historical perspective, just think about the money that can exchange hands now. And to think that Bill Smith was ruled ineligible from the 1956 Olympics because he was deemed a professional because he had a teaching job. I mean, just think about how far we have come from that. We're in different times. I'll leave you with the last word before we introduce our guest. Any final thoughts before we get to Hesh Sagafi?
Well, I'm thankful, Kyle. I'm thankful you're back in the saddle. It's good to be back doing these again.
It is. I love On the Mat. It's a highlight for me in every way. And we have a guest that's different than most, but I'm excited about what he's going to bring to the table because I remember him when he was wrestling in the 90s for Oklahoma State. Really, nobody's going to remember him. And I think he's going to articulate that, why you're not going to remember him. But he's a name that you're going to want to remember going forward because he's motivational. He's doing big things. And you're going to see why. Hesh Sagafi, he wrestled at Oklahoma State. Now he owns his own company, and we'll dive into that. But thankful for Cliff Keen Athletic. We want to hear from them. Then we'll get to our guest.
Now back in stock, the popular Cliff Keen Beast and Beast Junior backpacks. Finally, there's a backpack that works as hard as you do. Carry all of your essentials from school, practice, dual meets, and tournaments. And you can even customize the Beast with your team's graphics or logo. The Beast Backpack from Cliff Keen does it all. Go to www.cliffkeen.com and order your Beast or Beast Junior backpack today. And don't forget, you can get 20% off your order using the coupon code ONTHEMAT. This is a limited time deal, so take advantage of it while you can.
Our guest today is someone that I've wanted to have on the show for a long time now. Now it's a reality. Hesh Sagafi, president and owner of Liberty Home Mortgage, and he wrestled at Oklahoma State. He wasn't that good, but that's part of the great story of this, is that he credits wrestling and not being good and the abuse he took in the Oklahoma State wrestling room for how he got to the position he is in life today. Hesh Sagafi, how are you?
I sincerely appreciate it. I never imagined. I appreciate the introduction. It's definitely a very special introduction where he wasn't that good. But the numbers are the numbers, and the reality is the reality. So it is what it is. I was a career backup. That's how I described my 5 years at Oklahoma State University from August of 91 to May of 96. I was a career backup, and I sincerely appreciate the opportunity.
But you got in the lineup in 93 when Oklahoma State was on sanction. Was it fun to be in the varsity lineup there for a little while?
It was a dream. I mean, what I tell people is this, is that I was there at a very special time because ultimately, you know, my teammates at the time, I mean, when I was a true freshman in 91, 92, we had five national finalists and we had that year taken from us. We finished second that year behind Iowa. The Pearlers were suspended. We lost a couple guys due to, we had a few guys suspended and things like that. We still took second behind Iowa with five finalists. So I was there at a special time. And the truth of the matter is I used to get beaten so bad. But every morning I woke up, I was like, how many people in the world can get up today and say, I get to go wrestle with Kendall Cross today and John Smith and Pat Smith and Alan Freed and Kenny Monday. And I could just give in the Pearlers and TJ Jaworski. And like, it was, I remember going matches in the room and like John would say, okay, we're going to go like 7 7-minute goes, pick your partners. And my partners, when I picked seven, I would go Tony Pearler, TJ Jaworski, Alan Freed, Chris Owens, Pat Smith, John Smith, Kendall Cross. There's seven. That's just seven off the top of my head. And I think every single one of those seven was a national champion, let alone Olympic champion. So how many rooms can you walk into where when you pick seven random partners and you're just like, hey, who needs number three? And John's got his hand up. And I'm like, John, I'll go with you three. I mean, even talking about it, like, man, it was just awesome. So in that year that I was on the starting team in the starting lineup, it was like a dream, man. It was to wear the Oklahoma State singlet and wrestle in Galgaribe Arena and wrestle the schedule we had and to have John Smith in my corner, man. It was just awesome. I mean, it was. I mean, I got a lot of it. It was fun. It was a great experience.
When you say career backup, what kind of role did you have on the team? What did you contribute to the team? How did you fit into the mesh of the Oklahoma State lineup?
I mean, the one thing that I came to learn, and I can't say I learned it then, but I'm, you know, today, fast forwarding, you know, today, right now, I'm 48 years old. It's, I graduated from Oklahoma State in 1996. So it's been 25 years since I've been there. Today, I do understand that I had a critical role. You know, I wrestled behind, for example, Scotty Renee for my 3 years after the year I started as a freshman. For the next 3 years, I was a backup to Scotty Renee. A couple other guys, Johnny Martin, they traded off between each other. But overall, Scotty, for the most part. Well, with Scotty, for example, you know, Scotty needed a training partner. And I mean, especially leading up to the national tournament, when you're going to work out at 7 a.m. at the arena, and then you've got practice and you're going back up to the arena in the evening, Scotty needed somebody to work out with at 7 a.m. for the morning workout. Especially when you get near the national tournament, you know, it's really, you're really dialing it in and really fine tuning what's there. Well, naturally I wrestled Scotty off a bunch and I was, you know, I knew him and, I was there. So, I mean, it's a support role. And the reality is every single person matters. Now, back then, I wasn't so understanding of it. But today, I cannot stress that enough that I learned from that time. Today in business, one of the things that makes my business successful, it's not one of the things, every single aspect of my business, I have almost 300 employees today. What makes my business what it is what I learned at Oklahoma State in that wrestling room. And more so than that, the sport of wrestling itself. There's wrestlers today wrestling backup that are backups at Northern Iowa or, you know, wherever they are, whatever program, whether it's Division III, John used to always tell us, like, you don't go to sleep on anyone. If this guy's lacing up his shoes, John would always talk to you today. If this guy's lacing up his shoes, whether he's NAIA, junior college, Division III, this is a tough dude you got, and you got to be ready for him. And all of those wrestlers today, like the experience they're being given, the gift from the sport of wrestling, I'm testimony that 25 years from now, I promise you, it will be paying you back. If it's not giving you today what you believe you should be getting out of it. For me, I wanted to win the national title individually. I mean, I was on the championship team in 1994, but I wanted to win an individual title. That's what I went there for. And when I didn't do that, there was a big part of me that thought, like, well, why did I come out here? Well, 25 years later, if I could go back in time and shake my hand and say, thank you for not quitting. Thank you for supporting the team and always showing up. Because in 25 years from now, it's kind of, you'll be paid back times 1,000. I'd go back in time to do that right now. And if I had to relive the whole experience again, take all the wins or the few wins I had and the ton of losses that I had and all the seats, I would not exchange it for anything. If you said, Hesh, you could go to a different university and be a starter, maybe an All-American, or would you rather go back to Oklahoma State and relive being a backup? I'll fly on a fighter jet back to Oklahoma State, light speed. Man, I'll take it again. I'll relive that whole experience. I think there's nothing. I'll do it again in 2 seconds. I'll be a backup all day long on that team.
So you own your own company. You own Liberty Home Mortgage. Did you get the majority of the lessons on how you're operating this company through the sport?
I would tell you today, so my company today, we do business in 44 states. We're one of the biggest lenders in the state of Ohio. Ohio is one of the top 10 states in lending in the United States. So we're decent size. I'm not saying I don't have as many employees as Quicken Loans necessarily, but we're decent size, and we're based on production. We're very solid. As a matter of fact, of course, I always pay respect, of course, to my parents, my family, my school teachers, my school teachers in the neighborhood I grew up in. But I will tell you without a doubt, it's the sport of wrestling. Every single thing with business today, every single thing. I gave a speech this morning to about 80 of my salesmen. And every once a week, I give a speech to my salesmen on success. And then once a week on a different day, I give it to my staff, my operational staff. And this morning's talk was on focus on the journey and not the destination. And I gave the story of when I was in the sauna, and literally I gave this story this morning to 70, 80 people down in my conference room today. Of in August of 1993, I'm sitting in the sauna. It's me and John. And that was starting my third year. And my record at that time was 5 wins and 20 losses. I'm even talking about that right now. Like, I feel like, man, like, I think like if Mark Branch or any of my teammates are going to listen to this thing, I'm thinking, oh my God. But I was 5-20, right? And I started my third year. And I was, hey man, I thought like, man, I was 5-20, but you know what? I'm going to start this year. I'm going to win a title. Like I always thought like, but when you're surrounded by John Smith and Kenny Monday, and my goodness, I could go list 20 of me, JJ McGrew and Jacob Newby and Hardell Moore and Mark Branch and Stephen Schmidt and all these guys, Eric Guerrero, Teague Moore. I mean, this is just off the top of my head. I mean, there's a big group of people that were all Americans, not all Americans, backups, things like that were great teammates also. I could spend 20 minutes naming them. But when you're surrounded by those people, they always get you to believe that you're like everything is possible and whatever you put your mind to is possible. Well, John and I are sitting in the sauna, and John says to me, I'll never forget this, just him and I started this. It's probably August of 93, started my third year. He says, this is the year we won the team title, by the way. He says, you know what your problem is? He says, your problem is you're too worried about winning and losing. And I was 5 wins, 20 losses in my first 2 years, my redshirt year, and then my redshirt freshman year coming out. You're too worried about winning and losing. I said, well, but what are you talking about? I said, John, like that's what it's about. It's about winning and losing. He says, no, you're missing my point. He says, you're so concerned about winning and losing. And I'm not kidding you, Kyle. Like this changed my life. Like this had such an effect on me in that he told it to me in August of 93 that in 2021, right now, I'm sharing the story on your show. He says, you're so focused on winning and losing that you literally forget how to wrestle. Like, we don't even know who we're watching out there. You don't wrestle. Like, you don't do what you do. Like, we know you're better than that, but you don't do any, like, you don't do it. Like, you just completely. Now, the truth of the matter, Kyle, now, I wouldn't say this to John at that time. I never said this to him at that time. Was if I scored a takedown on somebody, I'm not kidding you, this will sound horrible. My goodness, everybody listening to the show is going to be like, this guy's, he was beyond horrible. But, like, I would score a takedown, I'd be up 2-0, I'd be like, oh my God, I've got to hold on for the next 6.5 minutes and I've got to win this thing like 2-0. Like, just hold on. And if I got taken down and I was down 2-0, I was like, oh, the match is over. Like, I can't come back. Like, oh my God, I got to score like 3 takedowns now just to catch back up and do this and do that. And oh my God, this world. And that's how it was. That's how focused I was on the score of the match. And that was the truth. And what he said to me had such an effect that for the next 3 years, I was still a backup, but I wrestled in a lot of tournaments and things like that, whether it was the St. Louis Open, which I don't think they have anymore, stuff like that. But the next 3 years as a backup, my record was 50 wins and 25 losses. So it kind of turned it around, adjusting my mindset. Well, I took that lesson, Kyle, and I applied it to the loan business, the mortgage lending, the real estate industry. And today, I just gave a speech to my salespeople this morning. I said, don't worry about how much money you're going to make or anything like that. Just close loans and do what I train you to do, and the money will take care of itself. And Kyle, I say that to people. I mean, I've got people in my company that make over seven figures. I say it to them all the time. Don't worry about the money. Now, in the real estate industry, it's the money. In the wrestling world, it's the score. And so, you know, I just took what John told me in August of 93, and I just applied it to the loan business. And quite honestly, I trust the process. I stay focused. I have a short memory. If I lost in a tournament, because I lost a lot, I mean, think about it. When you're wrestling in a tournament and you lose, you get dropped to the consolation bracket. Well, it takes a tough person to come back and take third place. You know, if you're seated number one and you lose, you know, you get upset to come all the way back through. But you have to have the sport of the sport of wrestling teaches us we must have a short memory. If you, Mark Branch, I love Mark to death. I was his, the guy that when he was on his recruiting trip, Mark was with me. Mark Branch wins as a freshman at the national tournament. First of all, he's 8-9 unseated. To this day, no one's ever been unseated and won the national tournament except for Mark. Mark's the first and only one. Mark upsets the number two seed in the first round of the national tournament, beat him like 13-2, gentlemen from Oregon State, whatever it was. Well, Mark could have jumped into John's arms after that match, being an unseeded with a losing record first round at the nationals, beating the number two seed. But here's the thing. You have to have a short memory. You've got to forget about that match, because guess what? The next guy up in the next round now thinks he's got an easy match. Like, Mark had to come every round with his A game because he wasn't supposed to be there. And you have to have a short memory. When you lose in the championship side of the bracket and you've got to come all the way back through and come to take third place, you have to have a short memory. You've got to forget about you were seeded number one. You should have won it. The ref took the match from you. You know, now you're going to take third place or fifth or seventh or whatever. You have to have a short memory. In my business today, I have a short memory. If I lose a transaction, a customer goes with somebody else, we have a bad month, we lose money as a company, whatever it is, it's hey guys, like let's go. Like yesterday didn't work out the way we wanted. Today's a new day. Let's go. Let's get up. Let's focus. Keep the I say this to people all the time. We got to keep the pressure on people. We got to stay in their face. We got to push the pace. We got to stay focused and committed to what we're doing. And every day is a new day. And every day you have to push yourself. Wrestling, Kyle, is every reason I am today where I am. It's not even, I don't have to think twice about it. Without the sport of wrestling, I mean, and I can't talk to enough kids who are out there listening who are the age I was, or they're a backup at Penn State University, or who knows where, junior college somewhere, or NAIA school. It's stay the course, don't quit. Stay the course and don't quit. In business, in 22 years of business now, I've almost gone bankrupt twice in 22 years. I've had big downs in business, a lot of struggles where I should have quit. But I look back at the sport of wrestling and say, I didn't quit then. I'm not quitting now. So I apologize. It took me 10 minutes to answer your question. I kind of talk a lot, it seems. But yes, it's all from the sport of wrestling.
Heshwin, you're so fixated on the scoreboard and results driven, and you're not getting the results that you wanted. What kept you going?
I appreciate the question. Ultimately, it was honestly was the opportunity. It was the opportunity to go back into a room and wrestle with and compete and be around by great people. And it was just a dream. It was a never-ending belief that, you know, I think Babe Ruth said it, that you can't beat someone who refuses to quit. Like, I believed in my dreams and goals so much that I believed that I would ultimately achieve my dream. And I believed it so much that nothing was going to stop me from it, even getting beaten mercilessly every single day. I mean, there were days, I mean, you have to understand that when I gave you those seven people earlier, I'm not kidding. Those were seven of my goals in one day. I mean, wrestle with TJ Jaworski for 1 minute, let alone 7-10. And then your next guy is John, your next guy is Kendall, your next guy is Alan Freed, your next guy is Jacob Newman, your next guy is, you know, Pat Smith. And I can just go on and on and on. It was the dream of what I could achieve and knowing who surrounded me, and just not quitting. Like you cannot quit. Like quitting is not, once you quit once, John used to say this too. Once you quit once, it becomes easier to quit later in life. If you quit today, it'll be easier to quit the next time around. And then it'll end up being your story. And for me, that wasn't going to be my story. It just wasn't going to be. I sure wasn't happy losing. I mean, I have pride, for goodness sake. I never accepted it. I always believed in the next match I would come back. And that's kind of what kept me going.
But when we lay out your stories, we talked about your introduction. You're the lifelong backup. You have a losing record in spots, but are you who you are today because you had to take those beatings? You wrestled the best. You didn't come out the winning end, but you got the lessons and you came out the other side a better person. You persevered. You used wrestling as a tool, and that's why you are who you are today.
There's no question about it. I guess that I'm older now. I could hear, like, I understand them better, but there's a saying that it's not about the destination. It's about the journey, and it's about who you become in going towards that destination. While I was chasing an individual national title, the person that I became is far greater than any title I could have won. That's just the truth. That's a reality. Like, I mean, going to wrestle with John, I mean, when I would work out with John, because I remember it was the day after Christmas, 1991, I was a true freshman. I was 18 years old, and John was getting ready to start ramping back up for the U.S. Open, the World Team Trials. But he actually sat until the finals, really, and that was in Pittsburgh in 92. And I think it was June of 92. And then he won the Olympics in Barcelona in August, September of 92. Well, I remember John coming up to me saying, "Hey, I need a workout." This is the day after Christmas, December 26th. And I remember him saying that, "Hey, I need a partner to start training. I got to start getting ready. So we'll start working out together." I'll never forget that. And I was standing here sort of like, okay, like I don't really know exactly what that means necessarily, but whatever. And from that day forward, I would train with John, and I would work out. We'd work out at 7 a.m. We'd work out after practice. We'd work out on the weekends. I was redshirting at the time, and I was 18 years old. And then like right after the national tournament, that's when he really picked up the pace. We were going twice a day working out, drilling and wrestling. You know, he would call me on Saturdays and Sundays. And I was telling somebody this story the other day that, you know, he would call me on a Saturday and say, you know, I was in the Bennett dorm. I lived in the dorm at that time. And he would, the phone would ring. And back in 1992, at that time, we didn't have caller ID. At least I sure didn't in the dorm. It's just a regular phone, no cell phones. And he would call, and I'd answer the phone, just hello. And he'd say, "Hey," he'd say, "give me two times." I'll never forget this. He'd say, "Give me two times." And I would say 10-4. And he'd say, "Okay, I'll see you there." He'd just hang up. And part of me was kind of like, okay, you could say like goodbye, have a great day, you know, whatever. But he was training and he was in training mode. But I, you know, okay, we're working out at 10-4. That means I had to be to the arena at 9:30 and 3:30. And I had to be ready and warmed up when he got there. And it was like the person I became from that experience was I got to see, I mean, to liken it to somebody, I suppose it would be like being Jordan Burroughs' training partner right now. You get to see somebody in a moment in time when they are the best of the best of the best, and you're witnessing it. And that's what, like, so the person I became going through that experience is priceless. And I use every bit of it today. I mean, everything I do across the day is, it's for me every day is like, I'm competing again at Oklahoma State in that room. And I'm like, it's another day. Like, let's go. We got to have a day. Like, we got to go, like, we got to wrestle, like get ready. Like, I remember walking at the Oklahoma Open out of the locker room with Pat Smith at the time. And I remember Pat, like, I'll never forget this. I was a true freshman. I was 18 years old. It was my first tournament. And Pat saying, "Let's win this thing. Let's win this thing. Like, we're going to win this thing." I was like, "Yeah, let's win it." Right. Well, in my head, I literally, I was like, it's easy for you to say you're going to win freaking 4 national titles. Like, I'm just hoping to make it by, like, until lunch. You know, like, I hope I'm still in the tournament by the afternoon session. You know, it's the Oklahoma Open, for God's sakes. Oklahoma's here and all these teams are here, whatever. But actually, I couldn't say that to him. I was like, yeah, let's go, you know, let's get out here, whatever. But, like, that's how I feel today. Like, I actually told John this a few months ago when I spoke to him. I said, how you thought when you were on top of the world wrestling and the best, I think I get it. Like, I get it. Like, today in business, like, I'm just telling you this, Kyle, like, this company is going to be a $1 billion corporation. Like, we're going to be, like, we're coming. Like, it's, I opened this company 7 years ago. There were a lot of changes in laws back in 2010 that really, they raised the standard to be a mortgage lender in the United States from what happened over a decade ago. So I finally checked off all the boxes to become a lender. And that was 7 years ago. And just in a short 7-year window, we're already top 25 in the state of Ohio. And we're in 44 states now. So, I mean, it's, we're coming. It's like, this company's coming, and it's not easy. It's not free. But I'm applying every single thing I learned from the sport of wrestling. Like, I would trade it for nothing.
I want to break down a few things that you talk about on your Instagram. I'm assuming I can find it elsewhere, but I've gone through that and really appreciate your videos. Number one is, you talked about early on how you came dressed up, suit and tie, and you scrapped that and you said, I'm going to play loud music and I'm going to dress however I want. How did you make that evolution and how you presented yourself at work?
I appreciate the question. I mean, so ultimately when I started up my business, I graduated from Oklahoma State in May of 96, and I started my own business up in 1997. And it was a hodgepodge of businesses. You know, I had a degree in biology. I wanted to be a doctor. That didn't come to light. So then I was looking for other things to do. So all I knew in business was what I thought. I got into the real estate mortgage side of it in 1999 at the age of 26 years old. I was 26 at the time I started doing this job. Well, so when I first started the business in 99, then I opened up my first mortgage company in 2002. All I knew was what I saw in banks and places like that, which was suit and tie, very regimented, very straight laced. This is how you got to do it. That's all I knew. And so I ran my first business in that manner, and it worked. We were doing very good as a company. Now, the mortgage crisis happened in 2007, the Great Recession. There was a huge real estate collapse, an economic collapse. So it caused, and they changed all the laws. So it caused me to reformulate how I did business. And it's really just through growth and maturation and age. It's just, you learn. I mean, today I think a lot of the wrestlers in college, I think they do a lot of sparring and things like that. The word sparring didn't exist when I wrestled in college. That didn't exist. It was drill to death and then wrestle live and kill each other for as long as you possibly can and butt heads and beat each other to oblivion. Today, I think it's more sparring. It's not so high intense. And I think it's just the evolution of the sport. I mean, I watch wrestling today. I mean, you know, I had a friend in here, Gabe Dean. Actually, I was talking to Gabe. That's a great, great, I say young man. That's how you know you're getting older. When I call Gabe young, and he is. And he was showing me how he does some of the funk wrestling where I shoot in and he dives over and grabs my ankle and rolls all over. I have no idea how that stuff is done. I barely understand the rules today. But like the sports evolved where when I wrestled in college, there was no such thing as dive over the guy's back, grab his ankle, roll over your back and come up the backside. That didn't exist. If John had seen me doing any of that, he'd have kicked me off the team for God's sakes. I was a walk-on anyways. I'd have been a freebie for him. He'd be like, don't worry, we're not paying that guy. We're not paying any money for that guy anyways. So the sport of wrestling has evolved. Look at Ben Askren. You know, the sport has evolved. Well, business has evolved where now because of social media, you could see me on Instagram. I can reach customers in California today who 20 years ago in business, I couldn't unless I had a physical presence there. But social media today, your show right now that I'm on, this show is going to get broadcast across the United States, across the world, and people can find it. That did not exist 20 years ago. So if you do not change and grow with the business and sales and how it's done, you're doomed to, you're done. You're going to be an outdated dinosaur. You know, I know there's a lot of wrestlers out there probably a lot of older wrestlers who refuse to take, you know, take notes on, hey, the sport has changed. These are new moves and new techniques. And they refuse to accept them. They say, back in my day, that was garbage. Okay, but we've learned there's new ways to hit these moves. There's better, more effective ways. So the same thing happened for business. So I took very regimented suit and tie, no music, no TVs, no distractions, nothing. It's coming in work and grind and sprint. And this is what we do today. We just won the top workplace for Northeast Ohio, for mid-sized businesses, companies that have up to 500 employees. If you walked into my building today, there's music playing from the parking lot into the building. There's TVs all over. There's TV. There's there's no dress code. It's a very laid back atmosphere. It's not micromanaged, but we watch and pay attention to it. So I have evolved over time with the tools that are now available to me that were not available 20 years ago. Videos are one of them, and social media is another one, just as an example.
All right. Second part is I'd like for you to give Andy Hamilton advice. So Andy is one of those guys that likes to grind, doesn't take vacation, doesn't take breaks. Give Andy advice on that.
So what you want to do, Andy, is the number one, the first step. So you want to open up a business and you like grinding and sprinting and pushing and taking no breaks. Good. That sounds like me. Okay. It sounds like all the people I wrestle with in college and the people I was trained by. Number one, you have to identify your goal. That's the first step of success is what I tell people. Identify your goal. Number two, you want, and this is what the key is. And this is also where my failures were in college wrestling that I didn't do. Number two, and this is critical. You have to identify what I call our success-oriented actions. Success-oriented. They're actions which are oriented, angled, or turned towards being successful. And then step three is cross the bridge of execution. You have to execute those steps. Something I did in college, I used to go out to the tumbleweed on weekends and things like that. Well, staying out until 3 o'clock in the morning is not, if your goal is to win a national title, staying out until 3 o'clock in the morning is not a success-oriented action. You know, success-oriented action is go to sleep at 9 o'clock. It's dieting, it's exercising, it's reading books, it's preparing your mind. So Andy, you want to identify your goal, you want to come up with a set of success-oriented actions, and then you got to start executing those goals. That's one thing. Another thing you want to pay very close attention to is who are you surrounding yourself with? Who are you surrounded by? I'm lucky in that I was surrounded by the greatest wrestlers, some of them in the history of the sport. You want to make sure the people you're surrounding yourself with are on the same mission as you. There's a little saying that typically the top five people you surround yourself with, whatever their income is, that's probably what your income is going to end up being. If you want, you know, if you're making the most money in the room, you're in the wrong room. If you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room. Pay attention to who you surround yourself with. Pay attention to your actions. Every single thing you do, Andy, matters. Every single thought you think, every single action you execute, every single thing matters. I did not understand that when I was wrestling in college. I thought I could eat Taco Bell. I thought I could stay out until 3 o'clock in the morning. I thought I could drink alcohol and things like that. The truth is none of that had anything to do with winning a national title. I did all of it. I didn't do drugs, of course. But I mean, you know, those actions are not oriented towards that. So that is my shortened, sweet version to Andy of how to get up and running and become more successful in business with what you're doing.
I mean, he's surrounded by me, Hash, so I don't know that it gets better than that, does it?
Hey, you're as good as there is around right now, too, so trust me, I'll take it.
I'm just messing.
That's pretty good.
Well, so when we break this down and how you kind of came to this point, let's go way back. Where did wrestling first enter into your life?
I started wrestling. I was born in 1973. I started wrestling in 1979, 1980. I started wrestling in kindergarten. So I started wrestling in kindergarten. I started wrestling all year round in seventh grade in junior high. Now in Ohio back then, we didn't have a middle school states or stuff like that. I was lucky that we had this powerhouse down the street called St. Edward High School, which besides producing a lot of great wrestlers, one of them was Alan Freed, who ended up becoming a great teammate and a great friend to this day. So in junior high, I started wrestling year round. And then from seventh grade forward, it was year round like that. So in high school, I wrestled, you know, my high school team was very average to below average. I had great teammates, don't get me wrong, but we didn't really have a winning record as a high school. And I loved watching the first national tournament I ever saw on television was when Iowa was going for number 10 and Brad Penrith got pinned by Bill Kelly in a spladle. And that was the first loss of an Iowa wrestler would cost him the 10. And then Jim Heffernan lost to Tim Krieger that year. That was my first national tournament I ever saw. It was in College Park, Maryland, I want to say. And when I saw that tournament, I was like, that's what I want to do someday. I want to win a national title. So when I was graduating high school in 1991, the truth is at that time, Arizona State, Oklahoma State, and the University of Iowa were the programs at that time. Well, I applied to those three schools. Those were the only three schools I applied to. I was accepted to all three. And because of Oklahoma State and just everything about it, Allen went there. I knew Allen from living in Cleveland, being in Cleveland and going up to St. Ed's. And I was lucky enough that Coach Ferguson at the time and Coach Urbis allowed me to go into their room and things like that. I picked Oklahoma State, and I swear to you, it was like winning the lottery. I went to Oklahoma State. I was a walk-on. So I land at Will Rogers International Airport. I've never been to the university ever. I land at Will Rogers in August of 91. I'm a true freshman. I got into the taxi and I said, take me to Oklahoma State. I didn't even know really where it was. I didn't know it was in Stillwater, Oklahoma. You know, back then we didn't have GPS and cell phones and all this goofy stuff. You really didn't. And I just had two gigantic duffel bags and my two guitars. And I played the guitar. And I just got in the taxi to take me to Oklahoma State. He drove me up there. And I said, I'm at the Bennett dorm. And he took me to the Bennett dorm and dropped me off and back. And I went in, and my first night, I'll never forget this. They show you these magazines to the university. It like they're showing these beautiful dormitories with, you know, five kids in it. Like they're all having fun and this and that. And I was in the Bennett dorm, and I was in the middle of the Bennett dorm, which was not renovated since God knows 1930 or something, whatever. And they had no air conditioning. And the first night I was there was 103 degrees. This is Oklahoma in August. Any human being that's been in Oklahoma in August knows that it gets up hot. It was 133 degrees the first night. I had no bed sheets, no blankets. I need blankets at that time anyway. So hot, and no pillows. I had nothing because I just felt like, I don't know, you go into your dorm room and like, they're going to have pillows and blankets and like bed sheets and like soap and shampoo and like all this stuff. And I walk in there and it was just a mattress, and I'm laying on the mattress, and my mom made me get American Express cashier's check. Okay. Because I never traveled before in my life without my parents. So she was like, these are safe and you need these. My parents are foreigners. I love my parents to death, of course. But like, they got me American Express traveler check, and I'm laying on this mattress. I'll never forget this. My first night in Stillwater, Oklahoma. I'm laying on the mattress thinking, I got to go home, man. Like this is horrible. Like this is completely horrible. But I had traveler's checks. So I couldn't I didn't even know how to cash them or like take a taxi back to the airport or something. So I was like stuck. And then I went to the Get and Go to go to the Phillips 66 gas station to go get a drink. And it ends up that I crossed the street. I'm running across the grass. I tripped over the light that lit the sign to the National Wrestling Hall of Fame. I did not know the National Wrestling Hall of Fame was in Stillwater. I tripped over the stupid light lighting the sign. I thought I broke my leg. I'm laying in the grass looking at the sign thinking, holy smokes, like the National Wrestling Hall of Fame. It's like right here. It's like right across from my door. So I went and got my drink and I don't know. And then I called Alan Freed the next day. I said, hey, Alan, Tesh, hey, what's going on? I said, hey, I'm in Stillwater. I was like, you're in Stillwater. What are you doing here? I said, I'm going to school. So you're going to school. She's like, really? I said, yeah. I said, I'm going to school and everything. Like I'm joining the wrestling team. And I was so scared because I was like, I don't know like if they're going to like let me on the team, you know? So that day, Alan tells me to meet him to go work out and lift weights. So I go to meet him at the football weight room, and here comes Alan. Hey, Alan, what's going on? And who does he have with him but Pat Smith? I'm not kidding you, Kyle. I almost passed out. Like I only saw Pat in like magazines and stuff like that, right? And at this point, he was a 2-time national champ going for 4. And like, I was like, I mean, I had Alan Freed in front of me, but I knew Alan. So to me, Alan, like I've known Alan since whatever. I was in elementary school or something, right? I was like, Pat Smith. I was like, hey, how you doing? I'm Hesh Stagassi. He's like, hi, I'm Pat Smith. I'm like just like a girl with the Beatles or Justin Timberlake or something coming by, right? And it was just awesome. It was just, And I go into the room and there's TJ Jaworski. And oh my God, he was on the poster to like the ASICS All-American stuff. And I don't know, it's just awesome, man. I remember the first time I saw John come walking into the room, he has pants pulled up to his chest. I'm not kidding you. The first time I ever saw John Smith, I'll never forget. I'm sitting on the wall with Jerry Best sitting next to me. And here comes John in the room. And I was like, I was expecting like, I don't know, like, you know, like I saw him in magazines and on television, win the Olympic stuff. And here comes with his pants pulled up to his chest. And like, I was like, that's John Smith. Like, and then of course, after I'd work out with me, pulverized me to death. It didn't really matter. He was, yeah, that was John Smith. All right.
Oh my gosh. And I have to think that cab ride was astronomical.
I had the cashier, the money orders or whatever I had. And I gave them those and yeah, I mean, it was awesome. But everyone welcomed me on the team. Like, they always treat me like Kenny Monday. Like, I remember Kenny Monday warming me up before I wrestled Kerry Colot in the dual meet. Now that I'm older, I think back to what he was telling me before I stepped on that. Kenny was like, you're ready, man. You're ready. Like, let's get this. Like, this is the number two guy in the country. Like, you're going to beat this guy. You're going to take his spot. I was like, yeah, let's go. Like I was so fired up. Today, I'm thinking back like how I coach my own wrestlers. I coach at a high school here in Cleveland, Brecksville High School. I help coach volunteer assistant at Brecksville. He must have been thinking in his head, oh, my God, this guy, poor little Hesh, is going to get freaking obliterated by Kerry Colot. And I hope Kerry just doesn't paralyze the kid, poor kid on the mat out there, whatever. But no, they were all like they all made me feel like they always made me feel like I was a somebody, like I was a walk-on. And I mean, I was a backup. And there wasn't a day that went by that those guys didn't like, from all of them, and just so many great teammates I had and people. And to this day, like I talked to Mark Branch, I talked to Eric Guerrero and Hardell Moore and Stephen Schmidt. To Pat Smith, I just talked to Pat the other day. I mean, it's just, I don't know, like they make you feel important. And Randy Couture, I messaged Randy the other day, as a matter of fact, they're coming out with the Expendables 4. So I messaged Randy, hey, because Randy was a fifth year senior when I was a true freshman. And I mean, I messaged Randy, hey, you're Expendables 4. Like, when does it come out? And Randy told me it's coming out next year. So, I don't know. Like, they're just great people. I was surrounded by great people. It's a great school. And I just loved everything about it. I could talk forever on it.
Hesh, your Twitter bio says that you're a persistent, driven maniac who refuses to settle for anything less than the best. When and where and how did you become a persistent, driven maniac?
I became a persistent, driven maniac from wrestling at Oklahoma State University. When I was in high school, ultimately, I was tired of losing. I mean, I won a lot of matches in high school. I wasn't great in high school, but I won a lot more than I did in college. I wanted to be surrounded by great people. And I had great teammates in high school, but they weren't state champions, you know, national champions, world champions, whatever. I wanted to be surrounded by that. When I got to Oklahoma State, by surrounding myself by those level of people, they taught me, I learned from them how to become driven. I remember I watched a video on Mark Perry, Little Mark. I say Little Mark, because you have to understand Mark Perry Sr. was my wrestling coach in college. So Little Mark Perry Jr., who most people out there, of course, know, you know, national champion from Iowa. Now he's coaching out at Sunkist out in Arizona. Well, I call him Little Mark because, you know, I think he was 5 or 6 years old at the time when I was in college, and they'd bring him around and he'd be like, oh, there's Little Mark. And I'd wrestle with him when he was a little kid. I remember Mark doing an interview on Flow Wrestling about Isaiah Martinez. And I remember Isaiah Martinez saying that I thought I was working hard and I wasn't. And Mark Perry was telling me, you think you're doing everything, you're not doing everything. And at Oklahoma State, being with John and Kenny and Kendall and all these guys, the thing that I was lucky for, and I look back today and I'm so thankful about, is that I paid attention. I really paid attention. The one thing, I may not have been a great wrestler, I may not have picked up on the moves or whatever it was, but what I could tell you was that I was keenly aware of who I was surrounded by, what they were allowing me to be a part of, and what I was seeing. And I saw that laser focus. When John would come in to work out, it was, I mean, when we'd work out on those, especially on those Saturdays and Sundays, one thing is that when the team was done practicing and then we worked out after the practice, well, John also already wrestled with, you know, Alan and TJ and Chris and Kendall and whatever it was, and we work out extra, whatever it was. But on the Saturdays and Sundays, especially, it was just him and I in there just by ourselves or in the early mornings and 7 a.m. in the arena or something like that. When it was just him and I, and it was just nobody, and it was just him coming in, the vision, you could feel like you could, he would come into that sauna and it was, are you ready to go? Like, just like it was. And then when we'd go onto the mat, we would drill and drill and drill. And then he was like, okay, let's go live. And he turned the clock on to go live and he put 10 minutes on it or something like that. And he would just like, it was just hit the look in his eye. You felt it. And when he'd say, okay, like, you know, go turn the clock on, and we'd shake hands. And he'd always stand up straight and he'd circle you. He'd start off by circling you. And then he'd get into a stance. And when he got into a stance, it was like, game on, dude. Like, this is a gladiator fight. And you better, it didn't matter how bad or I was or how good I was or whatever. I was wrestling with him live and I had to give him everything I had. And there was no, it was, you didn't laugh. You didn't joke. You didn't talk. It was, you were fighting for your life. I learned it from him. I learned it from Kenny Monday. I mean, the look on Kenny's face when he was, I mean, when Kenny was at our bench and I was getting ready to, I was warming up and Kenny was warming me up. And I mean, it was every ounce of them. It was Hardell Moore before you step onto the mat. And you, I remember the one time I'm stepping on the mat and Hardell just looked, I just remember so many moments that you learn what it's about to get down to business. Like, these guys are about business and this is what it is. And I learned it from there. I learned it from there. And I was lucky and blessed that it became part of my DNA and who I am. And today I only have one goal. It's to be the best. I accept nothing less than perfection. I realize perfection is not necessarily attainable, but our drive and chase of that is to never end. And every single moment matters and every single thing you do matters. And from the time you wake up until the time you go to sleep, every action matters. And I learned it from there. And it's just, it's what I do today in business is no different than when I wrestled. It's all the same. And I tell it to wrestlers, by the way, all the time, because we have a lot of people working for me who are all Americans in college. Alex Mackle is a young man. He was an all American from Iowa State a couple years ago. He just graduated and Alex works for me. I told Alex when he came on board with me, I said, take every single thing you learned at Iowa State. Take every single thing they taught you there, the people you were surrounded by. He wrestled with David Carr. You know, that's a, right now he's in the, you know, in there right now. Take every single thing you learned and just apply it to this job. And if you apply it to this job, I promise you, like Dan Gable said, once you've wrestled, everything else in life is easy. If you do that, this will be the easiest thing in the world. Because in college wrestling, there was 100 other guys that wanted what you wanted. I mean, I wanted to win the national title. Maybe I was nowhere near that level, but I wanted to win it. In the world of business, believe it or not, John used to say this to us all the time. If you guys just show up, if you just show up to wrestle, you will win 90% of your matches. Just show up. In business today, I say the same thing to my people. I say, guys, if you just show up, answer your phone, return a call, return a text, return an email, be on top of it, pay attention to it, follow your message, make sure your, you know, your emails are grammatically correct, you know, focus in on it. If you do that, you'll win 90% of your deals. You'll win 90% of them. This is the easiest job in the world. It can't get any easier than this. If you wrestle, for goodness sake, you can't. Every wrestler knows the Aerodyne. I bought 2 Aerodynes for our workout facility here. The Aerodyne, I don't care how good, how bad you are, whatever. Every wrestler knows the Aerodyne bike. If you rode one of those silly bikes in your career, you cut weight, you sat in a sauna, you ran sprints, you carried somebody on your back. If you've done that, dude, the working world, come on, man, this is, you just got to show up. It's, I learned it from wrestling in there and I carried it over to here. And it is true. I think I'm a fairly driven, persistent maniac, quite honestly, to an extent.
How long before John Smith pronounced your name correct?
That depends. If, am I going to give him any slack on his Oklahoma accent that he has to this day? To this day, he still calls me Hash, but, everybody, you know, I talked to Pat actually last week. It's Hash. So they pronounce their E's like A's. So it took a while. I mean, I don't know. There's just so many stories I have of, like, I remember running on the cross country track and Coach Chesbro, pulling up in his white Bronco, looking at me saying, I like you. I remember that, because I mean, when you're a walk on and you're on this team with Randy Couture and Alan Freed and Pat Smith, and I mean, Todd Chesbro was a national finalist and Randy was a national finalist and Kirk Mann was a four-time All-American and the Pearlers and Jaworski, you have all these guys. I was so afraid they were going to tell me. I thought, seriously, someone's going to come to me and say, hey, we finally figured out that you actually think you're going to wrestle here. Like, you're like, there's a junior college down the street. Maybe you should go try there. Like, I was terrified of that. But like I told you, they all treated me like they welcomed me in, because I think at the end of the day, I tried. And I think that's the biggest thing they gave me credit for, was that I showed up and I tried and I never quit. And that was the biggest thing. I mean, Mark Branch to this day, I talked to Mark quite a bit, actually. I mean, I love him like a brother. I mean, he's, and Stephen Schmidt, and, you know, I talk to Stephen twice a day, but they always talk to me like if you talk to Mark Branch, I swear, if he talked to you about me, you'd probably think I won one or two titles or something like that. They really, really is great people. And I think it's a greater reflection of the sport. I think there's so many Oklahoma States out there. So for all the people that are listening, they're in, where I was, you know, I was a backup. I mean, it's just that simple. I was a career backup. And for all those people that are in that position, I'm sitting here saying, hey guys, like that's not bad. Like keep working, work as hard as you can to be the starter. But if you end up not being the starter, it doesn't mean you failed. There's victories in defeats. There are. I would not trade my losses for anything today, but back then I would have, said, there's wrestlers that I wrestled with who I know today are not in good places financially or even as their life goes. And back then, I would have traded everything I had to be them. And today, I'm so thankful. You know, Garth Brooks has a song. So, of course, you know, going to Oklahoma State and living in Stillwater, I got to talk about Garth Brooks, right? You know, thank God for unanswered prayers. I mean, there were so many times in my career at Oklahoma State that I was like, man, God, if you could just give me the ability to do this, like, I'll give up everything. I don't care whatever I'm going to have in the future. I'll give it all up. And I look back and say, thank you, God, for not answering those prayers. And thank you for not having me quit. And thank you for having me as a backup. And I'm so thankful I was a backup. Today, I'm thankful. Back then, I was, and I was embarrassed. I was completely embarrassed for it. I was not happy with it. Today, man, I wouldn't have it any other way, man. And to say that I was a backup to Scotty Renee and Johnny Martin and my goodness, I'm forgetting other people that I was a backup to, for goodness sake. Geez Louise, they're going to be upset with me. But a lot of people. And I'm just thankful I was.
Yeah, and then where are your parents from?
My parents are from Tehran, which is the capital of Iran. My father, my dad, he was a surgeon. My dad, we lost my father last year. I know he's in a better place today, of course. He was a surgeon, and his training partner, my dad, was Mr. Esfahan, and his training partner. So my dad was a bodybuilder and a power lifter. And his training partner in the weight room was a gentleman by the name of Emil Habibi, who actually was one of the most winningest wrestlers in Iranian history, who actually got beat by Doug Bluebaugh in the 1968 Olympic finals, I believe.
1960.
I think it was 1960 or 1960. Yeah. 1960. There's a very famous picture of Doug Bluebaugh with a, you know, pinning him, you know, in Rome, I want to say it was.
Yeah.
But is, you know, you find all these crazy, you know, I met Doug Bluebaugh going to Oklahoma State, and I mean, he put a bar arm on me once, and I was like, holy Toledo, this, oh my God, that was painful. He was running the bars on me, but he's showing me some stuff. He's such a nice gentleman. But that's my parents were from Tehran, which is the capital of Iran. And so my dad was connected to Habibie, and unfortunately, I didn't get any of that individual skill set. Apparently, it's very apparent I didn't. But that's where my parents are from. My dad was a doctor. My whole family's doctors. My mom was a nurse. You know, so I had a very good family. I came from a very good neighborhood. I came from a very good place. You know, I grew up in a great area, and then going to Oklahoma State, I was surrounded by great people who, you know, John Smith and just people like that. All those people, Kenny Monday. Kenny just took on the job at Spire Training Center. I can't say enough things about them. Kendall Cross. Kendall was texting me. I mean, it's, so much telling my story and the naming the people I'm naming. There's so many people out there today that are wrestling in colleges, whether it's a big one or a small, whether it's Cornell, kids whom I've coached at Brecksville High School, Ethan Hatcher is wrestling at Cornell University right now. I mean, this is their opportunity and their moment. My message to them would be like, embrace the opportunity of college wrestling. Of course, winning is important, but it's not the most important thing. The most important thing is to be a good sport, is to work as hard as you can, represent your family, where you came from, and the school you wrestle for. Be respectful of your coaches and understand that your coaches have your best interest in mind. And then when, you know, there's life after wrestling, there's life after this sport. No matter how good you are, there is life after this sport. And this sport is going to give you so much that you're going to take from it. And that's why I try to give back to the sport as much as I can. I really try as hard as I can to try to help as many people as I can, whether it's financially, it's programs, it's donating to programs or coaching or anything. This sport's been, it's made me who I am. And flow wrestling, I mean, my goodness, there's nothing, Kyle, with what you guys are doing with flow wrestling and your show, and it's revolutionized the whole sport into I use what you guys put on flow wrestling in my sales meetings. I use it all the time. I use wrestling matches you guys show and things like that. And I mean, it's so the basic principles of success are the same no matter where you are or what you're doing. It's show up early, stay late, stay focused, identify your goals. If it helps you, if it helps you towards your goal, do more of it. If it helps you less towards your goal or works away from that, do less of it. The principles of success are all the same.
Well, I can tell you this. Andy and I refinanced our homes here within the last year. I think we would have gone with you had we known you at that point, but we'll remember you the next time.
I'll always do the best I can. And I hope, I appreciate all the opportunities you guys have given me. I hope I haven't bored you or ruined your show at all.
This has been great. We appreciate it. And you captured the essence of the sport and love what you're doing with wrestling. You're still in there. You're still advocating for it and you're still using its lessons. And that's a powerful lesson for everyone. So I really appreciate you being on the show.
When it comes to wrestling singlets, trust me, as a former wrestler myself, there is nothing else out there like Cliff Keen uniforms. There's a reason they've been around since the 1950s. With wrestling season now lasting throughout the year, Cliff Keen is running a promo for our loyal On The Mat subscribers. Go to CliffKeen.com, build and order a set of Cliff Keen custom singlets, and type in the coupon code On The Mat and receive 20% off your order. Coupon code On The Mat gets you 20% off singlets. This is a limited time deal, so take advantage of it while you can. It's that easy.
Andy, really enjoyed that conversation with Hash and what he had to say. If you come away from that thinking that there isn't value in wrestling, I think you're dead wrong. That guy was awesome. You can feel his enthusiasm. And what I like is that he wasn't necessarily the man. He was just a guy that was persistent, stayed with the formula, understood the formula, is able to articulate the formula, and he's doing great things within his profession, and he's not stopping where he is. He's driving forward. He said he wants to have a $1 billion business by the end of it, and hearing him talk about it, I have no reason to believe that he'll be anything but what he wants to be.
So many valuable lessons in that 50-some-odd minutes that we had with him, and it's one where I think it's be one that I go back to and listen time and again.
Yeah. And I like his Instagram posts and what he has to say. And what I like too was just listening to him talk about the evolution of the sport and how that parallels with the evolution of business. And that you look back the way things were done. And we've talked about this where I can remember the old Iowa way that if you didn't let a loss destroy your life, it wasn't truly a loss. I just remember that mentality for a while, that it had to destroy you inside and out. And now it's more about that growth mindset of, hey, I lost, what can I learn from this? And I go back to that great thing that I think it was Dayton Fix said, that he lost a match, but his dad praised him unbelievably because I think the last time he got majored and he made progress from the last time that they wrestled. So different mentality. You hear it in the business, and it's true. It used to be the 40-hour work week. You had to wear a suit and tie. If you didn't, you were neglecting your work. And now it's kind of it's morphed where you can do things from home. You can do things online. No need to dress up a lot in a lot of ways. So just a lot of powerful lessons on the evolution, not only of wrestling, but of the work-life balance.
You say this as you're wearing a tuxedo.
Well, that'd be awesome if I showed up to do one of these in a tux. That would be pretty sweet. You like Iowa tuxes, don't you?
Iowa tuxes.
Yeah, an Iowa tux overalls.
I don't have any. Nope, I don't have any.
Didn't you wear some overalls on the farm? I'd like to think you did.
Coveralls.
Or coveralls, okay.
They keep you warm.
Yeah. I'd like to see you break those out. I do.
I did when I cleared your driveway, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, you did. I actually have a pair of bib overalls. I'm going to wear them one of these shows. Not that anyone's going to see it, but I'm going to break those out sometime.
Well, so maybe that needs to be a YouTube version of the show.
It might need to be. But so glad to have Hesh Sagafi on the show. Follow him on Instagram. I think you will appreciate what he has to say. For Andy Hamilton, I'm Kyle Klingman. You have been listening to On the Mat.